This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive right here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith punching the time clock on a kind of dreary, not rainy, not like it has been the past 2 days, Wednesday edition of the show. Happy Cinco de Mayo. We're a bit spread out here this afternoon. I'm at Stately Smith Manor Studios. Bear is in the Bear's Den. Rick Butler and Guy Patterson III are in the Fan Run studios. Bear, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Not doing too bad, Russell.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Rick Butler, good afternoon.
Hello, my friend. We have everything locked down here in studio, so we're ready to roll from our end.
Awesome. Awesome. Hope you guys are doing well. Big show. Let's get right into it, man. We got Blake Topmeyer from the News Sentinel coming up here in just a little bit. We're going to talk to him. I want to get the latest on the investigation, because I think this is just kind of casting a pall over everything that Josh Heupel and Danny White are trying to get accomplished right now. And I think a lot of fans are, they want to be excited. They want to buy in. But I really think it comes down to this stupid investigation. And, you know, you can talk about, we did it to ourselves, all this, that, and the other, but I think that's really what's kind of holding fans back from jumping in with both feet in football right now. So we'll talk to Blake about that coming up here in just a minute. First, though, Bear, big news. It seems like we are continuing to trend towards full stadiums at sporting events. Governor Lee today saying outdoor sporting events should be a full go. And just an hour or two ago, Vanderbilt announced that they will be having full attendance at Hawkins Field, their baseball stadium, starting May 18th. Do you think Tennessee will follow suit and announce that they will have full attendance at Lindsey Nelson Stadium when number one Arkansas comes to town that same weekend?
I imagine they will. I don't see any reason really why they shouldn't. Risk with COVID transmission is extremely low outdoors, in the open air. I think going even back, but before the vaccines, as long as you were, used a modicum of common sense outside that you could protect yourself. And I don't see why not. The big issue I think will be, indoor. Like for basketball season, we'll have to see where we're at then and take a look. And hopefully we're starting to put this whole ordeal behind us. So the more people get vaccinated, the sooner it'll end.
Yeah, man, no doubt. It's been a long year, but pretty cool. Pretty cool that we're almost there. And Rick, you and I were talking last night, bud. The legends of Lindsey, as they call themselves, have basically thrown in the towel. I guess school's over, so they have all packed up and gone home, something that wouldn't have happened back in Bear and I's generation, but whatever, we were just a tougher breed. I think that's going to be huge to create that atmosphere, because without that group of a dozen or so kids kind of setting the tone in the corner of the stadium there, I understand it was not quite the same atmosphere this past weekend. So if you can go ahead and fill it up, I'd imagine that will be a lituation, as your generation likes to say.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is one that our generation likes to say. I think it is, at least. So the legends leaving, though, and they obviously have to go back home, and they have summer things to do as finals week is now wrapping up there at the University of Tennessee. I think this is a huge loss, man. I mean, you think about what this season has gone into. You think about how many storylines just those guys have created on their own. So, A, you have it from a fan perspective, right, and the crowd just raising some noise and raising the chaos a little bit in the stands, then I think you have it from B, a actual game advantage scenario, right? Let's go back to the LSU series. They consistently got in the heads of not only the LSU players, but the coaching staff as well. So I think that's kind of a big loss here as our final home series of the regular season just so happens to be the hardest test against the number one team in the country.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun, man. It's going to be interesting. And boy, if you're Danny White, you've got to be excited or just relieved, I would say, that it looks like you're going to be able to sell however many tickets you possibly can for the upcoming football season, which we talk about all the problems with Tennessee football, be it the lack of talent on the field, be it the investigation. The other big thing going on here is we're just kind of broke right now. I know that sounds ridiculous to say when you talk about all the revenue that comes in from TV contracts and everything, but they make a lot of money, Barrett. They spend a lot of money, and the dirty little secret is we just don't have the war chest that some of our SEC brethren have. If we did, this Tony Vitello thing wouldn't be a thing. I mean, we already would have announced that, hey, we're building this baseball stadium. We probably would have done that before COVID, and we would be able to just go ahead and give him a blank check and all that stuff. But we don't have to. We don't have that big of a war chest. Like I say, we're certainly not going to spend that type of money on a quote unquote non-revenue sport.
They're going to have to do something, man. They can't just let this guy walk, dude. I mean, I'll go to my grave saying that. I mean, you got this guy. You got to make the deal. You got to figure it out.
Yeah, and I hope we're not at the point of no return either, right? Where Danny White can, you know, is kind of going up to Tony Vitello and maybe talking about something going forward, and he's saying, man, we're at the end of the season. You know, I'm going to go ahead and just put my focus on the postseason, go ahead and play this thing out. I hope we're not at the point of no return, and maybe we can still get something worked out here during the season, like we talked about yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty optimistic when it comes to keeping him, but I'll tell you this, it makes it a lot easier if Danny White's able to get out there and sell a bunch of season tickets to football. It's interesting, isn't it, how all of this is sort of interconnected, and it all comes back to King football and whether or not they can get that thing healthy. And I mentioned earlier the investigation casting a pall over everything that they're trying to do over there right now. I want to take the pulse of the people. Bear, we're putting the poll in the field this afternoon.
Do it.
How do you feel currently about Tennessee football? Are you A, optimistic, B, pessimistic, or C, apathetic right now when it comes to volunteer football? And just before we go kick this thing around, Bear, let's hop back in Doc Brown's time machine and set the clock back 20 years. Let's go back to the year 2001 when Tennessee's got a really good team. We're, 3 years removed from a national championship. Things are going well. Things are looking on the up and up right now. Philip Fulmer's got it rolling. Nobody even really knows who Nick Saban is at this point. I believe he's starting his second year at LSU. Josh Booty is their quarterback. If we asked this question 20 years ago, I mean, it's 75-80% optimistic. The 10% legions of the miserable might say they're pessimistic. And then another 5% or so that for some reason wouldn't care about Tennessee football. I mean, the enthusiasm would be off the charts, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were crazed back then. We expected to win every game.
And what is it right now as we put this poll in the field? How do you feel, Bear? Are you optimistic, pessimistic, or apathetic?
Me, personally, I'm kind of apathetic.
Wow. Wow. Well, at least you can admit it. Rick Butler, what say you?
So, I to be completely honest, I'm a little optimistic. I think that with the refresh of a new coaching staff, that I don't know, to me that always gives me a little bit of life, and I would rather spend more time in optimism than not. So that to me is specifically what I hold on to. I think if we're obviously heading into any kind of season where we're repeating anything from last year, or we just know that something is inevitably going to come back from last year in any kind of way, that to me is completely different. But a new coaching staff, baseball team currently looking pretty good, basketball team good on the rise. I think that football is kind of, you know, settling itself right in there, and I am feeling good about it. But again, maybe that's because of the other sports looking also pretty good.
I'm with you, bud. I feel you.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah?
I'm a little optimistic as well, man.
Okay.
I like this guy. I've learned my lesson, not coach worshiping. I'm going to have to see something out of him. And again, I just feel like this stupid investigation, if we just go ahead and get it resolved, you know, even if the resolution is ultimately going to be really tough and really painful, even if it's a 2-year ban with scholarship reductions and all that stuff, just so we know, so it's finished and we don't have a situation where we're going to get stuck with another Pruitt types, you know, where he just can't get out of his own. I mean, it'll never be that bad again. I know we say, oh, every time we say that, so I feel confident in saying that we're not going to hire another Rube like that. Josh Heupel might be a failure, but man, he already can speak in complete sentences. He's not going to have the McDonald's bag fiasco or whatever. It's just I think that it's going to be a lot more exciting once we realize what exactly we're dealing with here in terms of the whole investigation and everything. So I think it's interesting. We'll go ahead and put that in the field. Your Rickard Ridge Barbecue smoking hot question of the day. What do you think about it? Ladies and gentlemen, are you pessimistic, optimistic, or apathetic? See the very early results here. We got 116 votes already. 1% of precincts reporting. 46.6% says they're apathetic. Oh, man, that's disappointing. That hurts my soul.
So
told you.
37.9% say they're optimistic. Only 15.5% say they're pessimistic. That makes me feel a little better.
So I think that you can really look at these results and you can see exactly what's going on. People are either really happy, or maybe not really happy, but people are either trending upwards, or I think they're just kind of done with all the mess right now. Obviously, only 14% are pessimistic, so a very small portion of the fan base, I think, is maybe, you know, what we look at into the Twitter sphere as the negative fans. I think really when you're looking at these results, and maybe they change, but I don't think they will too much, you see that either the fans are optimistic or they're just tired, I think, of all the drama and things like that. But you really don't see that many people who are fired up, negative, just angry with their pitchforks.
Yeah, and maybe, again, if we want to do the Doc Brown time machine test, if we went back 3 months ago, say, you know, early February, when I don't even know if Pruitt had been fired. When did he get fired? Was that middle of January or was it even into February? I don't remember. But I think that the anger and pessimism would be a lot higher back then. I think Heupel, again, without having coached a game, has he's kind of done everything that he has to do in terms of hitting the right buttons with the fan bases and the former players and all that kind of stuff. I know that doesn't mount to a hill of beans once the actual game starts. But I think that since he's been doing that kind of stuff, that probably at least simmers down a little bit of the pessimism. I think a lot of people who are in the apathetic pile in this poll early on would have been in that pessimistic pile 3 months ago.
Sure. I see what you're saying there.
So let's read some of these comments here. Outside Clutter says, I'm somewhere between cautiously optimistic and apathetic. The grad transfers are better than I expected, but this dude was dealt pocket twos and has to go all in.
Pocket twos. I feel like it's more 7-2 off suit. I mean, he's just straight. He got a straight garbage hand.
Maybe he can bluff his way to a couple of wins. Sam says, I'm apathetic right now, but if they are 3-0 heading into the swamp, I'll be excited and ready to get my heart broken again. Boy, isn't that the truth? I feel you, Sam. I feel
absolutely.
You. Tony Vitello's jockstrap says,
hey-o.
Are we really running out of good Twitter names? That's where we are.
Yes.
You think Tony Vitello even wears a jock? Why would he? Not a player. He just stands there. No comment.
I mean, you know, you don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to be an athlete to need one.
Tony Vitello's jockstrap says optimistic because there's a new coach, but if one thing goes wrong, it could turn into apathy real quick.
Yeah, see, like, I just find that interesting that I don't even think that people want to get that mad. It's just, to me, obviously, apathy is more just, you know, you feel beat up. Like, you just want to kind of let it go for a minute. You're kind of sick of it. And so I don't really feel like people are getting mad. They're just like, I don't want to deal with this again. It's never going to change.
Take a quick time out. Coming up, Blake Topmeyer of USA Today. He's not just with the new Sentinel now. He's nationwide. He's bad. He's nationwide. My favorite ZZ Top songs. Stay with us. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. We're back with more right after this.
The Drive.
Welcome back, Fan Radio. The Drive continues. Russell, Baron, Rick, back with you on a Wednesday afternoon edition of the show. We're pleased to be joined by Blake Topmeyer of USA Today, national college football columnist, specializing on the SEC. Good afternoon, Blake. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. You guys?
Hey, doing very well, man. Thanks for jumping on with us. Never too early to talk a little college football. I mean, have we started the countdown? What are we at? A little over 100 days, something like that, until the Josh Heupel era kicks off in Knoxville?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And a little more excitement brewing, I think, for the Heupel era, I guess, here recently, picking up a couple transfers. I mean, you know, these guys aren't all-stars, but I think it's a good sign here for Heupel that he's able to address a couple needs here in recent weeks.
Yeah, it's the new world of college football recruiting with free agency, basically. You go out there and work that transfer portal, and I think he's done a good job of that so far. Blake, what are you hearing? I'd be interested to know about the investigation. We've been hearing rumblings that it's wrapping up seemingly for months now. what do you know about where they're at with everything, and is it good news, bad news? What are you hearing as from the UT side of things?
I mean, not much. It's a question that, you know, I think we're all asking, we're all wondering. Every radio hit I go on for the last 6 months, that's the question on everybody's mind is A, when is this going to end, and B, what are the sanctions going to be, if any? And I think the unfortunate reality is that none of us know. I mean, I think, you know, I would be surprised if Tennessee's leg of this investigation is not wrapped up by, let's say, midsummer. I think that's probably, the end of Tennessee's side of things. But after that, it's still going to be in the NCAA's hand, and I just don't see any end in sight to that. I think that's going to drag on for months more, and so I think this is just going to be the situation is. Tennessee wants to move this along as quickly as possible, but the reality is they're not in the driver's seat entirely. You know, the NCAA is in the driver's seat. And so I think it's going to lead to frustration for coaches, administrators, players, all of the above. But kind of the way it goes.
Do you think UT will be likely to be accepting of whatever the NCAA's final verdict is? I know I'm asking you to speculate an awful lot here, but hey, it's talk radio. It's what we do, Blake. Do you think there could be a situation you could see where it comes back and they think, man, you know what? We worked with you guys on this. We tried to be as transparent as possible. We cut ties with everybody involved. We had a mass exodus of all these players who were involved in this stuff from our program, and you guys hammered us. We're gonna fight this and appeal this and have it go on. I mean, you talk about going on months. I mean, it could go on years if that's the case.
It could, and I think it depends on what the NCAA penalties ultimately are. If it's a postseason ban, I would think that Tennessee's first move would be to appeal. I think if it's a postseason ban, I think they're going to fight that. And I wouldn't be surprised if it includes a postseason ban. I know we've talked on that topic on this show before, and the nature of the violations, I mean, Tennessee kind of made it out to be sweeping and serious violations on the forefront. So I think it's hard to say that up front and then act too surprised if a postseason ban comes down. But nonetheless, I think if this would include a postseason ban, I would speculate that Tennessee would appeal it because they would assert exactly what you said. Hey, we've been cooperative, with this all along. We feel like we've taken measures to address this. We fired the people involved, et cetera. So I think they would appeal that. If it's punishment that doesn't include a postseason ban, I don't think you would see Tennessee put up much of a fight over that. I mean, I think they've known from the onset that there's a likelihood of sanctions and penalties here. I don't think you'd really be speaking out of both sides of your mouth if you fired your head football coach and two assistants and seven support staffers for cause and then, acted like it was something out of left field if you were hit with any kind of sanctions. I don't think they would really have a leg to stand on there. So, long answer to say if it includes postseason ban, I think they would appeal. If it doesn't, I would say they'd just take the punishment.
Obviously, I don't have any experience with working with the NCAA, but I just, based off precedent and particularly the Ole Miss case, which seems like there's some parallels there, I'd be stunned if there wasn't a postseason ban, Blake, just personally. And I'd almost be stunned if there wasn't a multi-year, a two-year postseason ban. I think if I'm Tennessee and I can get out with just a one-year bowl ban in Heupel's first year, I feel like that might be best case scenario. And besides, Blake, especially if I'm Heupel, the university, but the football coach as well, I'm much more concerned about them taking away scholarships and making my already difficult recruiting job more difficult than perhaps taking away a trip to the Music City Bowl or the Belk Bowl in year one, something like that.
That's true. The one added caveat, though, to a postseason ban is you're not then eligible for the bowl distribution revenue in that particular year. So from a financial side of things, from a department side of things, a postseason ban affects you in multiple ways. The obvious way is you're not playing the postseason, but the secondary portion of that is you're not getting the bowl distribution money as well. So, but I do agree with you. I mean, scholarship reductions could ultimately be more damaging to the program long term than a 1 year postseason ban. In Josh Heupel's scenario, I think the best thing he has going for him is that there seems to be an understanding, at least within the administration, that, hey, we brought you into a really tough scenario here. I mean, his contract outlines those provisions of, if there's a multiple-year postseason ban, he's getting an automatic year tacked onto his contract. So I think, that's the beauty of this situation for Josh Heupel, is that there seems to at least be on the front end here some understanding that you stepped into a pretty sticky situation, and we understand that it's going to take a little while to dig out of this hole. But it's interesting. You mentioned that Ole Miss case because I kind of use that as a litmus test as well. And I also think back to Missouri's case a couple years ago with the academic fraud that was going on at Missouri. And Missouri said they cooperated and they did. But you know, ultimately the NCAA came down with a 1-year postseason ban, and Missouri was all up in arms about this and said, hey, we cooperated. Why do we get a postseason ban? Well, at the end of the day, they had a tutor who was cheating, admitted that she was cheating for athletes. So it's like, you know, these aren't laws, but it's kind of like you break the law, you serve the time. It doesn't matter if you go in front of the judge and say, yeah, I broke the law. You still get sentenced for that. You know, I mean, you might get some leniency for admitting guilt and going out there and saying you were guilty. But still, ultimately, when these are the rules and you admit that you broke the rules, you can expect punishment to come on the other side of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would think this. Outside looking in again here that Tennessee, the accusations that we're hearing much more serious than the Missouri thing.
Well, yeah, that's a in Missouri's case was academic fraud versus in this case it's recruiting malfeasance. But yeah, just as an example there, you know, sometimes I think these colleges forget, or at least conveniently try to paper over, like, going in, again, to use the courtroom example, going in front of the judge and saying, hey, we screwed up. We're really, really sorry. We promise to do better next time. That's not enough to avoid penalty. You know, they might take some leniency on you there for your honesty and maybe not go as hard on you because you cooperated. That's the way the process is supposed to work. If you cooperate with the NCAA, you can lessen your penalty. But lessening the penalty and avoiding penalty, you know, is... it's two different things, and I would think, you know, I don't know if you would ever get Tennessee administrators to admit this because they want to play the public relations game, and now they want to hold out belief that they're not going to be penalized. But I think deep down, I think Tennessee's administrators probably know that there's a likelihood of penalties coming. Otherwise, you wouldn't have seen that negotiated into Josh Heupel's contract. I don't think if they thought there's no chance of penalties coming, then why even bother with that? But, you know, I think the presence of that and just looking at some of the track record for these cases that we've talked about, I think deep down they probably know that there's a real chance that that some penalties are coming here, and maybe not just penalties, maybe stiff penalties.
Bear?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I wanted to jump in about, Blake, with specifically in regards to Mizzou, and something I've noticed over the years, for whatever reason, and as bad as our recruiting violations appear to be allegedly, the NCAA, when you get over in a, like, academic fraud and, like, actively, you know, academic malfeasance and cheating, they've always seemed to hammer that, to me, a lot harder than, you know, general run of the mill recruiting type stuff, which is, you know, hopefully all that we're facing.
It could be. I mean, I think two, though, is the number of violations here. You know, you go back to that Ole Miss recruiting case, and they had, I don't remember what the exact number was, but they had numerous violations of major variety. And so, you know, if we were just talking about a handful of violations here or minor violations, then I think that would be one situation. But if you take Tennessee at its word, I mean, I believe the word sweeping was used in the press conference to fire Jeremy Pruitt, or serious in number. I can't remember, you know, maybe I'm not getting the exact wording right, but, you know, the violations were serious in nature and number at the words of Chancellor Dondi Plowman. It's like, you're blowing the whistle on yourself there up front and admitting that, you screwed up multiple times and you screwed up in a serious manner. And so I just think, you know, if that's true, and if you weren't just saying that to be able to fire someone for a cause, and I think if that was the case, we'd already see Jeremy Pruitt walking away with a rich settlement if none of this was true, right? I mean, he'd probably already have $5 or $6 million of settlement money in his hand, which he doesn't. So if it is true, and I'm led to believe that it is, then, yeah, I still have a hard time seeing Tennessee skate by here.
Talking with Blake Topmeyer of USA Today this afternoon. Blake, when all is said and done, and again, this could be months, it could be years, we don't know, do you anticipate that there's going to be another massive public information dump a la the Shiano Sunday debacle a couple of years ago, where we're sifting through pages and pages of emails and text messages from Philip Fulmer and Dondi Plowman and even the coaches and their university-issued cell phones?
I don't think so. I don't think we're going to get that level of information. I think you're going to see Tennessee assert its attorney-client privilege for most of this information. That's that's one of the reasons, I think, that if you listen, you remember what the chancellor said. She said as soon as the allegation came to her, she notified the general counsel's office. There's a couple reasons to do that. One is just probably your normal course of procedure in notifying your general counsel. But two, you notify your general counsel, and then you can try to claim to assert that everything's protected by attorney-client privilege. And then you add another layer of protection by bringing in these outside lawyers from Bond, Shainick, and King. And so then there you have another avenue of say, like, oh, no, that's protected by attorney-client privilege. Now, from the NCAA side of things, whenever it reaches the conclusion in a case and issues down a ruling, we usually see the NCAA come out with a report of what was found and why it levied the punishment that it did. So I think a lot of the information that ultimately comes out in this case is probably going to come from the NCAA in the form of a report, which those reports are fairly thorough, but they don't match the level of detail that we got in that that dossier of information that was released in the John Curry saga. Now, could Tennessee have asserted maybe some attorney-client privilege in the Curry deal? Possibly, but I think Tennessee in that case was very willing, after the settlement was reached with John Curry, to fork over some of that information because they wanted a fall guy in that scenario. And I think, some of those text messages and emails back and forth, they didn't paint John Curry out to be in the best light there. It kind of seemed like at the end of that coaching search, he disappeared off the planet and nobody knew where he was. And so I think it was very convenient there for Tennessee to release those records after the settlement was reached with Curry because he wasn't working with him anymore and they wanted him to kind of look like he went AWOL at the end, which, I mean, I don't think it was real hard to make it look like that because from all accounts, he did. But in this case, I don't know that Tennessee, even though, Jeremy Pruitt's fired and if they release information that makes Pruitt look bad, that's fine in Tennessee's case. I really don't think they want to put out more dirt than necessary about what they were doing in this recruiting situation. So I think most of the information that comes out in this ultimately is going to be in the form of a report from the NCAA when this is all finished.
Oh, man, that's disappointing, Blake. I think we all know how the sausage is made in these types of situations, but you can't tell me just out of curiosity you wouldn't like to see Brian Niedermeyer's phone messages from the past couple of years. It'd be guys like you and Trey Wallace who'd have to comb through those and spend days going through there and past the mundane to find the juicy stuff. But I bet it's in there.
Oh, it would be fascinating, especially if you got not only their university paid for cell phone, but their burner phones as well. That's just fascinating stuff. Most football coaches, if brains about you, and some could make an argument that some members of Jeremy Pruitt's staff did not. But most football coaches are running multiple cell phones here, so. If you got the text off multiple cell phones, I would love to see what was on there. I question whether Tennessee is going to be that forthcoming. They asserted at the front end that they wanted to be transparent here, and then they said, now that the NCAA is involved, we're kind of limited in what we can say. But when this is all said and done, I think that that front end promise of wanting to be transparent, I would guess that there's not much commitment to holding true to that word.
Blake, last thing, we'll let you out of here. Compelling conversation as always with you, man. The challenge in front of Danny White right now, he's known as this change maker. He's known for these innovative fundraising methods and everything. How does he go about rebuilding what appears to be a fractured relationship between the university and its fan base? You saw the reaction to his comments in an interview last week, where all he did was mention the fan negativity. He didn't really offer much of an opinion. He just brought it up, and fans were quite upset about it. What do you do to reach out if you're Danny White and try and build some bridges?
Yeah, I think Danny White's really stepping in it here in the first few months, to be honest, because I've only lived in Tennessee for 4 years, but I've been here even long enough to know that if you're not from here, you really have to be careful before you kind of come in acting like you know everything, and you don't need to learn about the past, et cetera. And I really think it shows a lack of understanding, a lack of humility for Danny White to really, in some ways, be critical of this fan base. Now, the flip side of that is I don't think what he's saying is untrue. I think we can all agree that Vols fans, college football fans in general, but Tennessee fans in particular, have a tendency, especially on social media, to be over the top at times with negativity. By the same token, I would say, what's there been to cheer about here in the last 15 years of getting close to now 15 years of Tennessee football? So while what he says might be true, and I think it is true, that Tennessee at times, their fan base is over the top with the negativity, particularly on social media, I don't think you should be saying that. Like, knowing something's true and saying that, they're two different things. You know, I think rather than focus on the way Tennessee fans have been in the past, how about put a product out there that's worth watching, worth cheering about? And if you do that, I think this is a very passionate fan base that's willing to get behind a winner and is willing to let aside some of the frustrations of the past. But there has to be something to cheer about first. So, you know, to me, I think there's been some missteps there from Danny White in trying to connect with this fan base. Frankly, I don't think there's been much of an effort to try to connect with this fan base and show an appreciation for what this fan base has been through in the last 13-ish years here, which has really just been a period of misery for a once proud football program. You know, when he went to UCF had very little history. Totally different situation here. And as we know, Tennessee, to a fault, loves to revel in history. And I think he's right in wanting to take this into a new era, a new direction. But I do think he could show a little bit more understanding and sympathy for what Vols fans have been through.
Yeah, I think, like you were getting at this, Blake, it's just don't even mention it. No good can come from it.
Exactly.
It's unneeded. Yeah. You're right. We all know the negativity is there. We all know it's a detriment to the program at times, but no good can come from Danny White or Josh Heupel or anybody else really even mentioning it.
Yeah, and the other thing I think he's fallen victim of is taking Twitter as reality. And I think we all do this sometimes, right? My early years covering Tennessee here, first couple years, I thought, boy, these Tennessee fans, I mean, they're just a wild bunch. And you know, but you're forming that opinion off of all Twitter. And then the longer you're here, the more you actually have face-to-face interactions with Vols fans. Like, I don't think I say this now. Vol Twitter is not a cross section of Tennessee fans. Like, it's they're kind of the people a lot of times operating out there on the fringe. I don't think it's fair to say that some of the over the top opinions we see sometimes on Vol Twitter are just over the top negativity or frustration. I don't think that's always a fair cross section of what Tennessee fans are like. At least not in my experience.
Sure.
So I wonder, you know, too, is Danny White taking Twitter as reality, which I think in all forms of life, you know, I would advise caution of thinking that Twitter is a cross-section of reality.
Oh, Johnny Majors was so prescient when he said the legions of the miserable. That was 30 years ago on CNN. Bear, Johnny Majors saw it coming even then.
But if you look at the support, I mean, this is a program that still enjoys strong, strong support, which I think in some ways speaks to the hopefulness of Vols fans, right? Like, I think for what this program has been through for more than 10 years, it still enjoys really, really strong support. They just want a winner. They just want something to cheer about. And for that, I can't fault Vols fans.
Blake, thank you so much, my friend. Always great catching up with you. Tell the folks where they could go and read some of your work and follow you online.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter at B Topmeyer, and you can find me throughout all of our USA Today network properties. But the easiest place for the folks here in East Tennessee would be over at KnoxNews.com.
Excellent. Blake, thanks so much. We'll do it again soon. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Blake Topmeyer making his presence felt on the G3 Help Me Hotline this afternoon. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident, call the Knoxville-based law offices of G. Turner Howard III, 865-558-8030. Online at g3helpme.com. We got to take a quick timeout. We do have some breaking news this afternoon on the UT football front. We will hit that up coming up in just a moment. Stay with us. It is The Drive on Fan Run Radio.
The Drive.
Apex Pest Control.
Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues. Russ LeBaire back with you. Rick Butler hanging out with us again here on the show this afternoon. And we do have a piece of breaking news for you this afternoon. Josh Heupel at it again in the transfer portal, adding another wide receiver today. Javonte Payton will be transferring to Tennessee from Mississippi State, where he played for Mike Leach last year. This is a pretty interesting pickup, guys. This is a guy that Jeremy Pruitt's staff wanted desperately and chose Mississippi State over Tennessee.
A couple
of years ago. Javonte.
Javonte Payton. Sorry. Javonte. What high school is he out of?
I don't know, but we were recruiting him out of
he's a Nashville kid.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, we were recruiting him out of a JUCO. He was a JUCO guy.
If
I remember correctly, I don't think we were recruiting him out of high school. But anyway, he was a good player, man. I remember the LSU game last year when the Pirate went down to Baton Rouge and won that game, and we were all thinking, oh wow, Mississippi State, Mike Leach. He had a couple of really good catches in that game. Looked very athletic. And I don't know what happened the rest of the year for them, but I think this is another good pickup for Josh Heupel and a staff that wants to throw it around a lot. You can never have too many speedy wide receivers.
Yeah.
No, you cannot. And I guess this is a new normal, Russ, with the transfer rule and the portal and everything. Now this, going back to your smoking hot question, Russ, this moves the needle for me off being apathetic a little bit, because I kind of feel like, even though we already, people take shots at our guy, Coach Heupel, he's not sitting around. He's getting active in the portal. He's out. He's trying to bring in talent, trying to turn over this roster, finding weapons. I like it. Move me to cautiously optimistic.
That's not an option, Bear. You're either optimistic, pessimistic, or apathetic in today's poll. You must choose. Rick Butler, your thoughts on Javonte Payton's commitment today.
So I think exactly what with Bear just said, another weapon, right, that you get to add to this team, and a little bit unproven, I think, throughout, and not unproven in the sense that we don't know that he can play, but just obviously for one reason or another has not entirely gone a full season as productive as maybe some thought he could be. But this is a guy who was, 6'2", a little less than 200 pounds, instantly going to make him one of the taller wide receivers in Tennessee's room. And, I mean, like you guys said, this offense is wanting to spread it out, and that they're going to use different types of receivers well. I feel like that was a really big downfall of some of these past coaching staffs, is they didn't use the talent that their talent had. Right, so for instance, they didn't use a speedy guy in speedy situations. They didn't use a tall guy in deep throw situations. So this is a guy I think that you can only evolve the offense with a little bit. Now, granted, I think we had a pretty stacked receiver room already, right? Like, we had some really good talent, so it's only interesting to see how he fits in, but nonetheless, you can't have enough, right?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I agree, Rick, I don't think if we are making a list of positions of deficiency, places where we need bodies, right? Wide receiver is not one of them. There are a lot of returning players there, a lot of talent there, a lot of incoming guys. It's a pretty crowded room. So the fact that he goes out there and gets this guy, to me, says a couple of things. First of all, maybe they need more receivers than the average team because we're going to be spreading it out and there are going to be more opportunities in the passing game for receivers to get on the field. But also, it's kind of sending a message not only to the wide receivers, but really the rest of the roster. It's like, hey, just because we're a little short on talent, just because it's been a rough couple of years, doesn't mean you can rest on your laurels and say, oh, we're not a good program, so I'm bound to play. No, if there's an area of the roster that could be improved, Heupel's going to go and try and improve it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, I love that, too. I like the idea that this coaching staff is bringing in and saying, hey, we are acquiring talent right now. We are trying to make this team as good as they can be as quickly as possible. We're acquiring talent whenever we can, wherever we can. And frankly, it doesn't really matter which position. Because like you said, wide receiver seems like a pretty stacked place already. But man, there's just going to be competition all over the board. And I think that's the kind of culture that breeds success, right? Where nobody's getting complacent. Where everybody is in a mentality every single day where they got to fight for their spot. Again, I think that is when you really start to get the gears working. But this is a massive wide receiver room. Like when you really look at the roster, which I'm looking at right now, it is big and it could be dangerous with the right quarterback.
I think it's just another example of the attrition and everything that goes on with major college football right now. You really can't ever have enough guys these days. I mean, you never know when somebody's going to, you know, hit the portal or get hurt. So I'm fired up about it.
Got 15 receivers already on the roster, including walk-ons. So this will make it 16. 6'2", 195, 4.4 speed out of Nashville Hillsborough High School by way of Northwest Mississippi Junior College. And now Mississippi State, he's a guy that's bounced around, is going to have an opportunity to make an impact next year for the Volunteers. Real quickly, we've got a minute or two before we go to the top of the hour. Guy will have the top 4 at 4 coming up here in just a minute. Bear and then Rick, quickly, your takeaways. Blake Topmeyer, another really good talk with us here on The Drive. What stood out to you?
Just for me personally, the talking about Heupel and the administration, they had to give that guy assurances coming in to be able to get him. Otherwise, if I were him, I would have just stayed at UCF. Yeah. You know, they know we're getting ready to get hammered in some shape or fashion.
Every Vol fan with half a brain has to know that, too. And that doesn't mean we'll go crazy during the Florida game. What are we doing? But when you go to sleep later that night and you cool down, you got to think, well, this guy's coaching Jeremy Pruitt's roster, or at least 70% of the players or so are Jeremy Pruitt's guys. And he's got an NCAA investigation. I know it sucks to be patient, Rick, but it's not his fault.
No, and you know, Blake actually had a quote there that I tweeted out because I thought it was great, and he said, in Josh Heupel's scenario, there seems to be an understanding within the administration that says, hey, we understand that we brought you into a tough situation. That really stuck out to me, but to be different, I guess, I just thought that, hey, there's a lot of different possibilities that could go with this, but nobody still knows when it's going to end. We just got to keep playing it day by day.
All right, let's take a quick timeout. Guy Patterson III will have the top 4 at 4 when we continue next. Right here on Fan Run Radio.
The Drive. For over 50 years now.